May the life that I live be yours, love. May the best I can give.
From the WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WPPV 100.1 FM in Bradenton, this is Ed James III with your headlines for Thursday, February 19th. Manatee County State Senator Jim Boyd has filed an amendment to a Senate bill that could block plans for a cruise port near the Skyway Bridge. The Bradenton Herald reports Boyd's amendment would bar dredging in the Terracea Aquatic Preserve. This follows a protest rally this past Saturday by residents and fishermen. The full Senate takes up the bill today. Ready to hobnob with the city's next chief executive? As the search for Sarasota city manager is down to six, the city is hosting a public meet and greet with finalists. That's this Monday, February 23rd at 5:30 p.m. The event takes place at the Robert L. Teller Community Center. In Tallahassee, former football coach Urban Meyer cleared a hurdle before joining the new college board of trustees. The Senate committee recommended his confirmation this week following his appointment by Governor DeSantis last year. The teenagers involved in a brawl at Northport High School bathroom will be held 21 days in jail. The incident on Friday sent one student to the hospital and forced a brief campus-wide lockdown. According to the Daily Sun, parents are planning a protest for safer schools Friday, 2 p.m. outside Northport High School. The iconic Bob's Train restaurant has a permanent future at its current site. That's according to a report by the Sarasota Observer. Thanks to a deal with a developer, the vintage circus rail cars are now slated to become the centerpiece of an affordable housing project going up near downtown Sarasota. Today, news spreads fast, but how do you make sure it's accurate? Tonight, the Selby Library hosts a panel on media literacy and AI titled Asking Questions in a Noisy World. Sarasota-based nonprofit newsroom Suncoast Searchlight is behind the event that begins at 5:30 p.m. Searchlight editors and reporters aside, it features experts from the Poynter Institute, the Journalism Center in St. Petersburg. This has been Ed James III with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, February 19th.
Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. The views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers. And programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2025-26 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. Well, it might seem early, but city commission races, all of our elections are coming up. So make sure you register. Go to sarasotavotes.gov, to make sure you're registered. Because with me today is John Harshman.
Hello. He is,
yeah, thanks for joining me, John.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You are my first candidate interview.
Wonderful.
For this election season, the 2026 election season. And you're running for city commission.
Correct.
At large.
Correct.
So far, there's Jen Ahern Koch. She's an incumbent. There's you, John Harshman. There's Flo Entler.
Yes.
And Rob Romanecki.
Correct.
Right? We did have more candidates, but some of them left the race. So I'm sure, I want to learn about you personally, but, and I'm sure all of our listeners do, but I think I want to start with, why the heck are you running for office? Because, you know, these days a lot of people just are turned off.
Well, that's a great question, and thank you, Kathy, for having me today.
Yeah.
Everybody asks me that question when I'm, you know, when I first I introduce myself to them. Mm-hmm. So, I love Sarasota, and Sarasota has been my home for 52 years, and I truly have worked hard to give back to Sarasota all mm-hmm. through my career here. I started to retire in 2025 from 45 years as I have in a commercial real estate business downtown. And I thought that I would do the stereotypical things that retirees do. My tennis game would get a little bit better.
You're kind of young to retire.
Well, right? I just turned 70.
Oh,
but thank you very much.
Okay. Well, you don't look it.
Thank you. You know, I thought I'd fish a little bit more and take Virginia and all the places that we talk about. And then I started, paying attention to the master plan update plan. And I was called in as one of the panelists to describe, the process back in 2000 when we went through it at that point. And I watched them kind of fumble the football to say the least. And I got a little concerned about that it wasn't really being handled as professionally as it should. And then you pay attention to the way that the city manager process has worked through, and that's mm-hmm. been delayed, and not having a city manager, a full-time city manager for almost 2 years really impacts the city in a negative way, I think.
Well, it's been since October of 2024.
Yeah.
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 So, not quite 2 years, but,
I take your point, you know. You would have hoped we'd have somebody permanent by now.
Right, yeah. Right. You would certainly have hoped that. And so I asked my wife, I said, you know, instead of sitting on the sidelines complaining about some of this stuff, maybe I should try to do something about it. She says, you want to run for city commission? I said, well, let's talk about it. So we did talk about it, and we reviewed kind of my history, and having a 45-year business career, I think, is a real asset for the city.
In real estate,
yes.
Right? Commercial.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So I'm familiar, deeply familiar with the land use issues and the codes and the future land use. So I wouldn't have to get up to speed on those. I understand it from the get go.
Yeah.
Also, you manage a budget. You sign the paycheck on the front side. All those aspects that really can translate into a good commissioner. Plus, I volunteered for numerous organizations throughout my career and chaired many of them as well. My most recent, I was the chair of the Pines. Sarasota, chaired Girls Inc. for 3 years, chaired the CRA Advisory Board and Public Facilities Finance and Advisory Board for the county, and some others as well. So I learned how boards work and learned to respect Robert's rules and how to pull people to consensus.
That's a big thing.
That's key.
Right? An orderly, respectful meeting.
Right.
Yeah.
But the most important thing, as my wife and I were talking about it, is that the one thing that I see that has been lacking is commissioners listening to citizens. And when I watch some of the presentations from some very thoughtful citizens groups, mm-hmm. and it doesn't seem to get the earplay that it should from the commission. And so he said, okay, if you're going to think about doing this, let's go on a 45-day listening tour, which we did. And I met with people from the environmental community, from the arts community, from the neighborhoods, from the condos, from the business community, from the not-for-profits. Got a lot of encouragement that they would like to see somebody on the commission with a business background. And mm-hmm. so my wife and I talked about it at the end of the year, and that's when we decided to run.
Okay, so you brought up a bunch of things that I want to get back to. But you've lived here for over 50 years. When did you come? Why did you come?
Thank you for that question.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very proud of how I came here. I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, and was going to a little college in Northwest Georgia to play baseball, and that wasn't really working out for me. And my sister mm-hmm. and future brother-in-law were going to New College. So on the Ides of March in 1974, seek an adventure, I hitchhiked into Sarasota, and I had $20 in my pocket and fell in love with Sarasota. Even though they were going through a horrible red tide at the time, I absolutely fell in love with it. The next day, I had two jobs, working construction during the day and washing dishes at Zinn's restaurant at night.
Wow.
I put myself through USF. I waited tables at Waltz, tended bar at Waltz, dug ditches, sold advertising, worked for a little newspaper in Bradenton. And after I graduated from USF, I had to figure out a career.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when real estate came. And then I started my business in 1989.
So you were sleeping on your sister's couch, I assume, when you came down here.
Yes,
right?
I was. Yes, literally.
I can imagine. Yeah.
But when you're 18 and, you know, she was
Absolutely.
20 and, you know.
No, that, listen, I think, you know, paying your dues, there's this really funny thing. It's a bit by Bill Maher, and it's on YouTube. But he talks about, you know, the not-so-nice apartments and all of that, you know, the not-so-fun jobs is how most people start, right? And there's an expectation these days that he's like, you don't get in a van and tour the national parks when you're 18 to be an influencer. You do that later, you know? So I think there's a lot to be said for that story, you know, your story of how you got here.
And when you're young, you're enthusiastic, and you don't realize that you shouldn't do it or that you can't do it.
Yeah, but you don't need a lot.
Right. No, you know, you don't.
You really don't. And, you know, you're free. It's just you. So it's exactly the time to be taking risks and taking all different kind of jobs. So I want to ask a hard question. Well, I don't know if it's hard, but you're going to get this question. I think, and this touches on a lot of things, which I want to get deeper into, but I think you're absolutely right about people feeling that they're not listened to by the city commission. And you might have seen it on social media, but the first criticism, you know, on my promotion was the guy's in real estate. He's going to rubber stamp development. What do you say to that? Do you think that we have overdevelopment in the city? What's your take?
Well, we certainly do have a tremendous demand in all of Florida. Overdevelopment, absolutely, in some areas. In some areas, you know, could use some, you know, a little bit of help. But as far as me being a rubber stamp, I'm known for doing the right thing. I'm known for having a reputation of integrity and honesty. So there's going to be no rubber stamps. I'm at the finished with my career. There's no carrots that people can dangle in front of me and say, oh, we're going to give you this if you get this. No. And my love for Sarasota and for all the people in Sarasota would certainly eclipse any kind of attraction to any special interest group at all, be it, you know, development or other.
Okay. So what do you think? I mean, I live downtown. You live downtown.
No, we don't. We live south of town, south of town.
Just south of town. So what do you say to people who would say to you, Sarasota's lost its charm, there's too much traffic? Do you think that the downtown development has gone too far? And I'll give you a few examples. Like, if you look at the Quay, is that a good use? If you look at Tuttle and Bella Vista and the apartments that are already going up on the south side of Bella Vista, and they're going to go up next to the fitness center, the Y, where that Temple Beth Shalom is, we're going to have more apartments there. So how would you speak to people who say that shouldn't be happening? It's too much. The traffic is too much. Whatever.
So all good concerns and all topics that need to be discussed. So let me go back a little bit in history. Mm-hmm. When I first came in 74, you could always get a parking space at the beach. Saturday, Sunday afternoon, beautiful day in the season, whatever. Yeah. You always get a parking space at the beach. You could bring your dog out there. But you couldn't buy pizza on Main Street. And it was just a whole different town. So having the population increase, and the city's population back then was just about 50,000. It's about 58 now. The county has ballooned significantly. The county's back then was probably 190, and I don't know what it is now.
It's over 400. I think we're at like 440.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is. So it really has ballooned a lot. You know, the Quay was really kind of interesting because that was zoned CCBD, which is 50 units an acre. And
what is CCBD?
That's the old zoning that either the downtown Bayfront or downtown core replaced.
What is
Commercial Central Business District,
okay.
Which also permitted hotels and residential to 50 units an acre.
Mm.
And so they kept the 50 units an acre mm-hmm. there when they rezoned it to downtown Bayfront after the Duane plan.
Okay.
And so that was 700 units on that side. It's 14 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're seeing now. And, it's the buildings being as close together as they are.
Mm-hmm.
The market has just taken off. Nobody ever thought that we would have Lennar Homes building apartments in downtown Sarasota.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, it's, 15 years ago, no one thought that that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the zoning is in place now. And so entitlements are in place.
Yeah. Well, and for me, because I have a real estate background and we own some commercial real estate, which I manage. But housing, getting back to that young person who's sleeping on the couch and, has to make ends meet and get up on their feet. Sarasota is a very tough place for a young person, to to start out like that and find a place to live. So while, I understand people's concerns about overdevelopment, I definitely do. I had Andrew Georgiadis on when we were talking about the apartments at Bay Vista and Tuttle, and we were talking about the opportunity for some mixed use with, like, a little deli or coffee shop, which we knew wasn't going to happen. It's very frustrating to me how people in this town, leadership, government, they talk a certain talk. And, another example is the building The View, which is at the Gulfstream Roundabout. It's the entry gateway to the Ringling Bridge and the Keys from downtown. That's just like blank wall. There's no street level commercial.
There's an interesting anecdote about that building. So when Duane came in, Duane was a proponent of new urbanism.
Andres Duane is kind of a legend for bringing that back, and he developed Surfside. Or no, what's it
Seaside.
Called? Seaside. Not Surfside's the condo that fell apart.
Right, that's right.
Seaside's something else.
Yeah,
we don't want to talk about that. So, and if you've seen the movie The Truman Show, that was filmed in Seaside, but it sort of brought back this walkable development and how people crave that. They really want that.
Yeah, he was a guru of new urbanism, which basically takes the John Nolan plan, who is the original master plan for downtown Sarasota and as well as Venice, and he expanded on that but use those principles.
But John, it was like Main Street USA. I mean, when people had to make their development inherently profitable from the beginning, that's how people developed, So, yeah, to your point, it's John Nolan. But this is like every little town in the United States before the car,
Well, I think that John Nolan was in 26.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, Duane's plan was to bring the buildings right up to the street. And the idea behind that is that when you're a pedestrian, you're walking down the street, you can look into the windows and be entertained.
Yeah.
And that works well for Main Street and State Street and some section of Pineapple. It
mm-hmm.
does not work well for 41. And the staff took that same condition and put it along 41 as well. And when The View was being developed, Mike Furin was their attorney, and they wanted to step the building back. They wanted to step, it was either 10 or 12 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked the city staff three times if they could do that, and they said no,
mm-hmm.
all three times. So that was how intransigent they were on that. And had they stepped back the buildings along 41 there, it would look a little bit better and certainly would be a better pedestrian experience.
But what I'm saying is I'm fine with it being closer. I would like some actual commercial.
Yeah.
It would be nice to have a coffee shop. You've got all these residents, in that area, and the nearest coffee shop is, half a mile away. So it's just, I don't want to get hung up on that, but I think there's this natural tension where people obviously don't want too much traffic, but then, if you're aging and you need to downsize, it's a lot easier to be in an apartment where you can walk to the store and get your groceries. And we don't, I don't think we have enough of that. And it's been my experience when you talk with neighbors about that and you show them a nice example, they get that. But we don't require that. And, you know, that to me has been very frustrating to watch all the misses in that regard when it comes to these master plans. So, you know, we have it in the city. Let me ask you, you know, in the 1970s, and you and I are old enough to remember that era. I was a child, but you weren't that.
I was working.
Yeah. But in the 1970s, we saw flight from U.S. cities. And when you don't have people living in the city, you're not going to be able to buy a slice of pizza, like you said. You know, you're not going to be able to mail your, well, you could get to a post office. But my point is, you're not going to be able to have a meal. You're not be able to go to the drugstore because if there's not enough residential support, the businesses go.
Absolutely.
Right? So here's my question. It's a couple of questions. Talk to me about what you think about the mix of uses downtown. Are we getting to where we have too many bars and restaurants? Do we have enough retail? And I also want you to tell me what you think about residents and noise downtown. Because there is this mantra, well, you know, you bought in a city, so you should expect some noise. And I do get that. But if you make it inhospitable for people, you know, are they gonna stay? Like, we need those residents to live downtown, you know, for the businesses.
Absolutely. So, our downtown was never lively and vital until we got residents living downtown. And that didn't happen until after 2000. You know, we had Bay Plaza and a few along Palm Avenue and stuff.
Yeah.
But in the 80s and in the 70s and 80s, there were a number of clubs downtown. There were probably six or seven different clubs, and they were very active at night. People would come down there at night. They'd party all night, and then they would go home, and downtown was kind of a ghost town.
Yeah,
there were a few remaining retailers there, the Cinderella Bootery, Delson's Shoe Store, mm-hmm. Schroed's Jeweler, and stuff like that. But most of them fled. And interestingly enough, the first one to pull retailers out of downtown was the Ringling Shopping Center, which is now apartments. But I digress on that. But in the after 2000, when we started getting residents downtown, well, before that, also the Granary was downtown in the middle of the 1400 block. Mm. It was in 4,500 square feet, a health food store.
Groceries.
Yeah, grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And they had zero parking, but they survived because of all the parking on the street. That shows how dead it was during the day.
Mm.
But as soon as we got residents downtown, then we started getting more vitality. So you have to protect your residents. And the noise is, like a lot of things, it starts at one, and then it goes to two, and goes to three, and goes to four, on down the, that's not time, that's just, you know, it just grows. And
mm-hmm.
so there does need to be a curtailing of that. Events downtown are, the downtown condo owners that I talk to, they love Fresh Fridays, they love mm-hmm. the farmers market, you know, those kind of events are wonderful, but when they're subject to having, events two and three nights a row right in front of their building during the hardest season, and it stays loud until late at night, you know, that's a little bit too much for people to ask. And yes, they did live downtown, but that's, you know, those events weren't there when they first started building the condos downtown. So that's something that came afterwards too.
Yeah.
So they have a right to their peace and quiet.
Yeah, I just think, you know, there's a balance, right? There
yes.
should be a balance. And for people who, it's kind of a glib dismissal. Oh, well, you bought downtown, you should expect noise. Listen, you bought downtown, it's not going to be crickets at night. And I think everybody knows that. However, if you make it so that the quality of life is so negative that people, it's not desirable anymore, you're killing the goose that lays the golden egg of a vital downtown. Because, of course, you want people to come downtown, but you want people to want to live there.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so that's a big balancing act. What do you think about the plan to build housing across the street from City Hall, that plan?
Well, first of all, the city should not be in the development business. Development is extremely hard. I used to tell people that I know more broke developers than successful developers until we started getting all these developers from out of state that were really pros and they knew what they were doing. And they were very successful.
Can I just stop you there?
Sure.
Because for people, I don't think people understand why it's hard. So, from your business background, because, you know, not every developer is greedy. Not every developer is doing wrong. But why is it a high-risk business? Why are some successful and others not so great?
But for a multitude of reasons. One, you have to understand a lot of different aspects of developing, such as the First Street property. That site is 100 feet deep. In order to build a efficient parking garage, it needs to be 125 feet so you can have cars going both ways and parking perpendicularly to that. And so you start out with an inefficiency there, and then they want to build a 12-story building. Well, anytime you go over five stories, the cost of construction just skyrockets.
Really?
Yes. So those kind of details were missed. What drove that was emotion. We want to deliver affordable housing, which is a laudable emotion to have, but that was not the right site.
It's, you know, I had to, when you said beyond five stories, the costs go way up. If you look at Paris and Florence, Italy, they're five stories.
Right.
And I never knew, you know, I knew they were five stories, and they are the most magnetic tourism cities in the world. So I never heard that it was actually a huge cost increase beyond five stories.
Oh,
that's
tremendous.
Interesting.
Tremendous. Well, and you look at what the housing authority does, and that's a different socioeconomic level of housing, but that's all three- and four-story product with surface parking, so that's a more cost-effective construction.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you build a parking garage, even if it is the most efficient parking garage, it's still going to be $30,000, $35,000 of space. If it's not efficient, it goes up to $55,000, $60,000 of space.
Parking space?
Yes, parking space. If you look at the city side, that has one of the most efficient parking decks downtown, and if you go in there, there's no columns coming down. The dimensions of that site were such that they could lay it out so that it was the most efficient site, and then they could construct it or they could pour it basically off-site, bring it in, and put it together. So it's a very efficient.
How many stories is that?
I think the project is four stories. I don't know that the parking deck is full four. Yeah. It may be four.
So when people have a criticism that, you know, these buildings are too tall, there's some justification, based on what you're saying, for keeping buildings shorter.
Sure. And there's justification from a market standpoint for, you know, to go up. And I'm not defending one way or the other.
Yeah.
But the city side proved to the city of Sarasota that we could get 75 units an acre in four stories if the site had the proper dimensions. And that's key there. When you take something like the Obsidian site, and it's 12,600 square feet, and it's really a tight site, and it's hard to build.
Yeah, so if you're not aware, listeners, Obsidian, I've called it the pencil tower, and Ron Shapiro was on a few weeks ago. It's a quarter-acre site across from the Palm Avenue parking garage, and they want to put this 252-foot building. They say it's 18 stories. In reality, I mean, it's 18 stories because the stories are like 28 feet, kind of ridiculous, because of interstitial space. So your point is well taken, like a huge building on a quarter acre like that.
Well,
it doesn't make sense.
Actually, the Demarque is on a smaller lot, but they have a parking elevator in there that I don't know if it works or not, but that's their design.
Mm-hmm.
So you can physically do it. The Obsidian is just not in the right space.
The Obsidian would be a heck of a lot taller than the Demarque.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, but getting... Go ahead.
So just go back to the Obsidian.
Yeah.
That's an example of where past commissions should have gone and looked at the code and told staff, say, we want you to do some case studies on these different properties around, just pick random properties and show us the worst case scenario. Had they done that, mm-hmm. they might have realized the interstitial space, which gives him that extra height, and they could have made a correction at that point so that we wouldn't have this problem. But that's what happens when you have people in there that don't have the understanding of development and don't understand the code as much.
You know, I think you're right. There's a way, and we're getting into city culture now, there is a way that City Hall, the staff has tons to do. They do a great job in so many ways. And the commissions, there's certain commissioners that just seem to defer all the time to staff and don't really give direction. And then they'll go, oh, the charter says that's the city manager's job. Yes, but the city manager works for you, you know. And so I appreciate what you're saying, that a lot of times we just don't seem to have commissioners who have the understanding that you're describing, which I don't know that you necessarily have to have the business background, although, of course, it's hugely, like, there's no...
Well, look at all the misses that they've made without that.
But there is a way you can research that stuff, too. And there's just this... It's like a lack of fortitude. I don't know how to describe it, but I've been really disappointed to the point where we saw the former city manager do a couple of things. One was, you know, the situation with an accusation being made against Kelly Franklin with an unsubstantiated, non-verified social media post that was fake. And, you know, there's court, you know, she filed a writ of mandamus, she won, and the city's pushing back on correcting the minutes. It's amazing to have a city government that could allow the smear of a citizen like that. And, you know, so that instance comes to mind, but then also watching the lack of decorum at the table and... you know, when Commissioner Ahern Koch, her house had been flooded, she was asking for more time to look at a plan. And I thought she was being heckled by the city manager or really harassed. And her fellow commissioners didn't do anything about it. I've been so shocked at the lack of respect and the lack of decorum. Tell me what you think about that. You know, am I too sensitive here? I don't think so.
I don't think you are. I think people need to be respectful. And clearly I have witnessed situations where they're not being respectful. And a lot of that comes from leadership. And once leadership takes people into respectful rooms, then people seem to stay there. When I look at how staff has kind of run a lot of the, you know, a lot of the issues, the commission is supposed to set the policy and supposed to set the leadership, and then they tell the city manager, and they're supposed to just interact directly with the city manager, not with the rest of the staff. And they need to be clear with the city manager. If the city manager is not getting clear direction from them, then they have a tendency to go wherever they want to go. And unfortunately, what happens there, if they're not going down the same policy line that the city commission wants, then they're wasting staff time on areas where they should be focusing on. And one of the big issues that we – actually, let me go back to this. You had talked about the – the culture at the city. I was walking down the street the other day, and a high level city staff person came up to me and congratulated me for running. Mm-hmm. We chatted for a little bit, and I said one of the biggest issues is we're going to have to get a good city manager coming in. We really need one.
Yeah.
And the response was, yeah, we need someone who can set our vision and lead us forward and do that. I said, no. That's what we want the city commission to do, and that's what we want the citizens to do.
That's right.
That's indicative of where their thought has gone.
Yes.
And that's because they haven't had a strong city manager for a little while and a strong mm-hmm. commission to communicate clearly mm-hmm. and honestly with the city manager. I think getting one of the five city managers that are on the short list, I think getting one of them, I think will go a long mm-hmm. way to correct some of that.
Okay. So let's go back to that point about the city shouldn't be in the development business and the land across the street from City Hall. You know, a lot of people, myself included, were concerned that affordable housing really it's not really affordable if you need to be making $100,000 a year to live in it. And that's pretty much the salary range, you know, that they're talking about for some of these units.
$87,000.
Okay. Yeah. Still high.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. Still
high. And if the city shouldn't be developing that, what would you do with it? If you could do anything, what would you do with that property?
What, with that property?
Yeah.
I'd sell it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the city shouldn't be owning it. They shouldn't be land banking it. That's not their business. Their business is to run the city.
Okay.
And if there's a lot of things that have been kind of left behind, the clean and safe aspect of the city is not where it needs to be. Our crime rate has gone down, which is really good.
Yeah.
But it's not clean. And it's not clean in the neighborhoods and the sidewalks and lots of those issues. Once we get those nuts and bolts taken care of, then I think that we can move on to some other things. But staff has been pulled off on these next big, great star in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have the time to do the things that aren't quite as sexy.
That need to be done.
Yeah, which is like keeping us clean and safe. And that's what the downtown condos, when we're having, I saw the proposal for the walled off, condos. Mm-hmm. And as expensive as they are, people don't want to walk out on the street and see a dirty street.
Yeah.
You know, people don't want to walk out on the street and see a vacant building that is just kind of left there in shambles. There should be a code mm-hmm. in there that requires vacant buildings to be kept in a condition that is acceptable.
Yeah. Okay, so I take your point, sell that land. But what is the role of the city in helping create affordable housing?
So there are things that the city can do in terms of encouraging, and they have done some of that. I question whether half a parking space per residential unit is workable. They say it has. I have not seen the data on that. But they are doing different things. They've got some impact free relief and things like that, which they can offer to a development. If the city as a policy says we want to put that $7.5 million that they spent on First Street on another lot that's maybe larger and gives them the opportunity to build a product or to have somebody else build a product
mm-hmm.
that is cost effective, then, you know, maybe you go down that road. But the city itself does not need to be in the development business. And I think they'll tell you that now mm-hmm. after venturing down that road. As you can't go into it with just emotion. You have to go into it with empirical data and has to be evidence-based.
Yeah. So recently at a city commission meeting, Jerry Fogle, who's the director of Parks and Recreation, he talked about how the planned building for Bobby Jones Golf Course is really more than the Parks Department can afford. He wanted the city commission to go from a two-story building to a one-story building. And, some commissioners who had voted for the original building, balked. One in particular was saying, wait a minute, we voted for the other thing. And he said, listen, if you want the two-story building, you can do it, but we're not going to have the money to fund all these other places. So what is your take on the use of resources, that particular issue? You know, what kind of structure should there be at Bobby Jones golf course? And, you know, what do you see as the future of the parks, taking care of our parks, maybe new parks?
Well, there's a couple things. One thing I learned at the CCNA meeting that they are working on a zoning for all of our parks. Mm-hmm. That they're working with staff. Evidently, some of our parks are zoned for residential use, and I'm not really sure why that is.
Yeah,
but I thought they came up with a really good idea to have P1 and P2, and so they would have different permitted uses in those parks. So that's good. So that kind of lays a little bit of a foundation for it. I think it's good if you haven't constructed something and you're coming back and you're saying, whoa, these budget numbers are too high. We need to revisit it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. Business does that all the time. And you have to be able to do that. You have to be flexible. The emotion that we have to have that because I want a two-story building, you know, if you can afford it and it works within the budget that you're working with, then that's fine. If it doesn't, then you do have to make adjustments.
Yeah. Yeah. You had mentioned your sister went to New College. You know, right now there's some word that New College is looking to absorb the USF Sarasota Manatee campus. And I think there's legitimate concern. Maybe there should be more concern because I believe USF offers some degrees that are important to the local economy, and New College is kind of a mess right now in terms of its credibility and track record in the changes that they're making at New College. Do you see a role for the city government or county government in influencing that process? Do we really want to see USF go away when, you know, it can be a very important asset for local businesses to get staffed by educated employees?
Yeah, so all I can really say is that you know, Ringling College and New College and USF and Manatee have all been real assets to both Sarasota and Manatee County, and to the extent that we can keep them flourishing and keep them providing educational opportunities, I think that's a good thing. I was at a New College event where they were talking about all the inroads that they're making with having classes in AI and also some of their marine biology. So they're expanding some areas. You're getting more students there, which is good. Hopefully some of those students will graduate and then stay in Sarasota. My sister did. She stayed, got a fine arts degree, and became a lawyer.
Hey, there's a lot you can do with a liberal arts degree, right? The budget. It's a big budget. Have you looked closely at it? Do you see places that you'd like to change or tweak?
Yeah, there's a lot of areas in there that need to be. I mean, it's a $300 million budget. The public safety is about 49% of that. So there are individual areas in there that need to be looked at, and, you know, come budget time, hopefully I'll have that opportunity to go through those on a line item.
Okay. I wrote a piece. I have a column on Substack, and I wrote a piece a while ago about Marty Hurwitz, who I said was the most important person at City Hall that you hadn't heard of. And I called him the commission whisperer. He had a back-of-the-envelope contract with the former city manager, Marlon Brown. We've paid this gentleman quite a lot of money in two capacities. One was as a consultant for strategic planning, which honestly, you know, I know people like him, but he really doesn't have training for that. But he would run the strategic planning process as a facilitator for the city commission during their workshops. Honestly, for me, the fact I've been kind of alarmed by some of the discussion, having done forecasting and strategic planning in my sales career, I was not happy to see that somebody needed to be there to coach them. And I'm not saying a facilitator doesn't make sense. I think it does. But it was the level of acumen was concerning to me. So that's number one. Number two, he functioned as a like personal coach to the city commissioners, some more than others. And I've talked to people who I normally agree with, who argued for the value of what he did. And I'm not saying there was no value. I just found it wildly inappropriate that the contract wasn't professional, that he didn't really have, you know, any kind of training that I could see. And it just felt like, is there a Svengali behind the scenes working with the city commissioner and commission, not just one? So, you know, what do you think of that whole deal?
What does it tell you that the commission needs something like that? What does it tell you about you mentioned their acumen?
Mm-hmm.
What does it tell you about that?
You know, here's the thing. I'd rather see the mess because I would rather see the human flailing, you know, hey, I don't know all about this. I don't want to see a show. I don't want to see, and I'm not saying that if somebody gets elected to the city commission, you and I talked about this before the show, I think you can have somebody that jumps in to politics from a career that you wouldn't necessarily think, and they can be great, you know, and there can be a learning curve. The mechanism, though, to me was really off. Like, so I do agree with you. I understand what you're saying about the acumen. I could forgive that and be happy to see an honest flailing process. You know, we're talking about people. It doesn't have to be perfect.
Well, it sounds like that they've gotten to the point that they felt like that they weren't accomplishing what they wanted to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And so they needed that kind of assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point about, you know, getting, if you do decide that you want to do that, and groups do, business groups do that often as well, you know, they bring in people to help facilitate different things, different visioning processes and different planning processes for them, which is a good thing to do. Sometimes you really do need a third party come in, mm-hmm. and you want to get the best people within your budget, you know, and yeah. we always say we always want to get the best of this, and well, you know, you know, maybe A minus person is just as good as an A for this particular thing.
Yeah.
So I don't fault him for getting it, but this is the first commission that I have heard that has had that.
Yeah. Well, listen, I talked to some experts who are familiar with how governments run across the nation, and what they said was, we've never seen anything like this. The contract, the way it all came about, they're like, this is just, there's no other place that does this. And the normalizing of this stuff as if it's, you know, there's nothing to see here, it's fine. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is bizarre. So.
Full transparency.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, it was a very, just like a Twilight Zone thing to watch, or actually it was something that was very much behind the scenes. You know, you saw it if you were watching the workshop and you saw the dynamics in that strategic planning process, but the personal coaching was not something that you would have seen. You have to be somebody like me who is looking under the hood. So, yeah, very strange, and I was not a fan of that, although I'm sure he's a very nice guy. I'm sure he is. I don't doubt that. And I don't doubt that he's a smart guy, but it was the way the city did it that was troubling. So, you know, we've seen situations over the years. I'm going to say Lido Pavilion. That was something that I organized, a group of wonderful people, something that there was just practically universal opposition to putting a sports bar in the family-friendly facility. It would have commercialized the space. you would have had cabanas there for rent for $100 a day, would have priced families out, and I think created more of a spring break culture there, spring break bar. And I think there would have been safety issues. There certainly would have been parking issues. It was stunning to us that the city commission did not see or particularly care. It took them a long time to come to the understanding that the public does not want this. There have been other issues, Selby Gardens, you know. It's ironic to me that the botanical garden in our city has been one of the worst offenders when it comes to chopping down grand oak trees. And, they were given that latitude. I think there was an assumption that they could be trusted with that kind of discretion, not being held to the city's grand oak policy. You know, it's not just about the looks of a place. We need those trees for stormwater mitigation. They do make the place more safe. They cut the wind when we're having storms. And it has been very disappointing, and it gets to the culture of City Hall, that, you know, commissioner that opposed it was told that she could not be in the photo of the groundbreaking. Her name was not mentioned. This is Jennifer Ahern Koch. She is deliberately excluded from events, a recent phase two groundbreaking event, and her name not mentioned as if she doesn't exist. So there's a vindictiveness there and a lack of understanding that, hey, we are going to disagree. And some people are just, they're doing their job in voicing the concerns of citizens. So those were two controversial projects that I think the city could have done a better job. And certainly, I don't think any commissioner should be facilitating or going along with an organization that is excluding one of their colleagues. You know, so what is your take?
Well, so I think at the end of the day, on Lido Beach, you won. So I think that's a good thing.
It was a pain, though. It was a lot of work.
It was a pain. Yeah. And it shouldn't have been as painful as it was, but you won. So that's good. Also, on the City Island, the proposal to turn that into an amusement park, we won on that, too. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, that got squashed pretty quick. And those things are going to happen in a dynamic, attention-grabbing community like Sarasota. But you did touch on a point that I think is very important, and that I found out during my listening tour, talking to lots of different people in the community. There is this sense that, and I would have people telling me when I was talking to somebody that's, say, on the way left side, that somebody on the right would say, don't talk to them. And when I would be talking to somebody on the right, somebody on the left would say, don't talk to them. Mm-hmm. And I had to tell them, say, you know, we disagree, and we can disagree vehemently on some of these issues, but the right is not evil and the left is not evil. They live here, and they all love Sarasota in their own way. And they're trying to do things differently, and we want to move Sarasota forward for the best for all of Sarasotans. And that doesn't, every group is not going to always get what they want, but what I can offer is a fair, even review of all the issues, and I will listen to everybody.
Yeah.
And then I will make my decision. I will not make a decision prior to listening to everybody, and I have no special interest ties.
Okay. So you're not, you don't have a PAC that people are going to be dumping, you know, thousands of dollars into to support your campaign. Okay.
Although you can donate.
Okay. So let me ask you one last thing. What is your take on our form of government? Do you have any issues with the city manager, city commission form of government? Do you want it to change in any way?
So I was very much involved in one of the initiatives to form an elected mayor form of government. And we did this back in the, I guess it was the early 2000s, maybe the late 98. It happened three times in my business career. The first time was in the early 90s, I think it was, and that got beat 54%. Then when we did it, we worked really hard on it, raised a lot of money, and really thought that the idea behind it was that you would have multiple people that would campaign, people that have had experience in their life running things. They would campaign, they would lay out a platform, and then the electorate could decide which one of those platforms we want, and then in 4 years we can judge them based on what they've delivered and what they haven't. So we worked really hard on that. We got beat 72%. And then the next time it happened, there was kind of a crazy plan where they wanted to add two commissioners and do this. I didn't support that one. So
and then one of them never got on the ballot.
There are communities, and lots of communities in Florida, that work with an elected mayor very, very well. Sarasota's had a city manager, commission form of government for a long time, and I don't see it changing. I mean, it's just, unless there's an initiative.
Are you good with it? Do you want to change it?
I'm running to be a part of it.
Okay. All right. So how do people find out more about your campaign?
Great question. Thank you so much. You can go to our website, which is harshmanforsarasota.com, or you can follow us on Facebook.
Okay. And I imagine there'll be debates coming up.
So I hope there are debates. You know, we see forums, and forums are not quite the same as debates, and we can get a little bit of back and forth in there. But I hope that we do have debates. You know, I want to talk about the real issues of Sarasota, and I think everybody else that's running does too. And I applaud everybody else that has put their hat in the ring. I know how hard it is.
It's not easy.
It's not easy. And you did it as well, so I applaud you for doing it. Thank you for that. And sometimes you just got to step up instead of sit on the sideline and complain.
That's true, yeah. And I ran for county commission in 2010. That was an at-large race. Very tough to cover the whole county. You're running at large in the city. So everybody, if you're listening and you live in the city of Sarasota, you're going to be voting in this election, and it's going to begin in August.
Yes.
Because there's four of you.
Correct.
So people need to know that August election, it does not matter what party you're in. If you live in the city of Sarasota, you're going to be voting to winnow down the city commission candidates. But if one of you gets more than 50% of the vote, then you're elected.
Right.
And those, the top vote getters who are under 50%, will go to a runoff in November. And then that's true for the school board too. Yes. Another nonpartisan race that's going to be really important. And those are all at large.
So for the city, you vote for two. There are two spots that are open, and you'll vote for two, and it is a nonpartisan race.
So
we'll be getting Republicans, Democrats, and Independents, and anybody who's a registered voter.
Yeah. So how's your wife doing with all of it? It's very early, but it's a lot.
It is a lot. Of course, I consulted with her from the very beginning, and she's been absolutely wonderful. She's been behind me 110%. She manages the Facebook page for us. She has a degree from
what's her name?
Virginia.
Okay.
Virginia. She has a degree from Notre Dame in marketing, so she's a master's from.
So that's great.
It's great. It's a great asset for me.
Yeah. All right. Well, John Harshman, thank you so much for joining us. Everybody, you've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.
Inside, filled with